This is In Focus on News Radio 1350 KMAN.
And a good morning to you. Welcome into In Focus here on News Radio KMAN. I'm your host, Brandon Peoples. Dave Lewis on the other side producing things, and it is our monthly opportunity to have a conversation with Riley County Police Department Director Dennis Butler, who joins us in studio. Good morning.
Good morning. It's good to be with you again.
Yeah, we are just getting ready for 4th of July. Lots of heat right now. It's heating up out there. You guys taking extra precautions here with your department and your officers having to be outside?
Well, generally, when it gets hot like this, and especially humid, we encourage them to hydrate before they come to work. And then if they get stuck outside on something with all that equipment they wear, ballistic vests, we're very conscious about providing them relief on a short-term, regular basis so they can get out of the heat, hydrate some more. So, yeah, that's something that we focus on quite a bit because it doesn't take long for them to be overcome in these conditions.
Talk with your PIO here, Haley Rowland, earlier this week about, you know, just kind of getting a reminder out there about, you know, making sure you're checking your kids, your pets. Don't leave them unattended in vehicles because, especially this time of year, it doesn't take long for those cars to heat up.
Yes, if anybody sees unattended children in a car, they should call us right away if they can't rescue the child themselves.
All right. Well, that's something we'll definitely continue to urge here, and we have information on our website and our Facebook page here. We always enjoy chatting with you here because you're kind of an open book here. You you get out there and you say it like it is here. And, you know, I was kind of intrigued because earlier this month there was a pretty big purchase made here for the police department, and that's with the Bearcat. I was surprised, really, with the reaction, though, that came with that here from the public. We had a lot of comments on our Facebook page when we posted that, and I just kind of want to maybe give you the open floor here. I know you had an open letter that you wrote, and why the police department needed to make this purchase here.
Well, as you know, the decision to make the purchase was actually made last year prior to my appointment, but it's fair to acknowledge that if I had been here in the same situation and the same opportunity had come up after what had happened early last year with one of our officers being shot in the line of duty, I would have made the same recommendation and purchase. I know that some people view it differently in terms of acquiring this kind of equipment. For the police department, the most common comment is the militarization of law enforcement. I certainly understand why people might view it that way. But the point I made in the open letter, and I'll make it again here, is throughout my career in law enforcement, it's been a constant evolution. It's been an evolution in practice, in equipment, technology, training, you know, the list could go on. And when ballistic vests, you know, the body armor that officers routinely wear now across the country, those vests were actually first manufactured for military use and then later manufactured for law enforcement use. And it was designed to protect them from being shot in the line of duty and protect them from serious injury or death. And according to the federal government, I researched this, those ballistic vests, the body armor, have saved over 3,000 lives of police officers so over the last few decades. And then after Columbine, we saw departments starting to deploy handheld ballistic shields made out of the same material. So when they had to go into a dangerous situation and they couldn't wait for assistance, backup, or their SWAT team, they could use that ballistic shield to protect themselves. To me, this is a natural evolution in providing protection to police officers in situations where they could come under gunfire. 2 weeks ago or so, there was a rookie police officer in Sacramento, I believe, California, who was responding to a domestic, and while she was approaching the building, she was ambushed and shot. She laid out exposed for over a half an hour because the shooter kept shooting, and first responders could not get close to her and rescue her. This is a situation where a piece of equipment like this would come in handy, not only to rescue police officers, but citizens as well, other first responders, and also allow officers to get close to dangerous situations so they can establish communications with people who might otherwise not want to talk to them.
this vehicle really, its usage would be kind of as a last resort. Isn't that fair to say?
Yeah, you know, it's not an original cliche, but for many years in law enforcement, there's been a saying that citizens, when they need help, they call the police, and when the police need help, they call SWAT. And this is a piece of equipment that our tactical team has been issued, and I also want to make the point, it's not a regular patrol vehicle. It's not out on the road every day. And we've actually had deployments of our tactical team where the Bearcat was not part of that deployment because it didn't, it wasn't required based on the threat matrix that they are required to complete and present to me with a recommendation on just a deployment initially. And then they also ask what kind of equipment they want to take. And I either say yes or I say no. And there's been times where their recommendation didn't ask for the Bearcat to be deployed, and so it wasn't.
It's interesting, you know, because so many people, as you mentioned, it's kind of a stigma almost with the militarization of the vehicle. Do you plan to maybe have that out more in the public here, maybe at a festival or parade, something like that?
As much as possible. In fact, when we first acquired it, there was some sort of event that week on a Saturday, and they asked to deploy it that day, and I said, let's get this thing marked first so people know, you know, where it is, who owns it, and also make sure that we conduct the proper training in its operation, and also make sure that we test it to make sure everything works. And once we have that down, then we'll start taking it out to events. And the whole idea, again, it's not to show off. It's not to intimidate people. It's to educate them. So even though it does, I mean, you have to acknowledge it does look like a piece of military equipment. That is not what it is, and that's not what it's intended for. It's not an offensive piece of equipment. It's a defensive one and meant to protect people, not hurt them.
We had some questions, I know, on our Facebook page when we some good Facebook questions here, well thought out, with regards to the maintenance cost of this going forward. I was going to ask you here, how will that be paid, and what's the cost of also training officers to use it?
You know, on the maintenance, that's really a great question, and I overlooked that when I wrote the letter to the public. The maintenance costs on the equipment will be paid out of our general budget, but because this is not an everyday use vehicle, in the early years, the only maintenance that I would anticipate are fuel costs, oil changes, the normal maintenance you would perform on your own vehicle. Far down the road when tires need to be replaced or maybe something else needs to be replaced, yeah, those costs could be higher than an average vehicle. But the vehicle will be stored undercover in a garage, so it won't be outside in the elements every day. You won't see those normal maintenance costs accelerated because the vehicle is parked outside. But seized assets won't be used for the normal maintenance of the vehicle. And that's something I should have addressed, and I overlooked it. So that's a good question.
And by seized assets here, that's what you used to purchase it at about $301,000. Kind of explain how that process works, because I don't think it's very clear to a lot of folks.
Well, there's two sets of laws that govern how assets are seized by a police department. One is federal, one is state. There are state laws and federal laws that govern both. And typically, these assets come into possession of the police department when they are connected with crime, usually drug crime, but some sort of serious crime where the whatever is seized is either fruits of that crime or used to carry out that crime. And the police can't just arbitrarily take it. There is a court process. They have to file paperwork with the courts. The courts make a judgment or an adjudication on whether or not those assets were connected to a crime. And so it's not just because we say, it's because a judge agrees that these assets should be forfeited and not given back to somebody engaged in the commission of serious crime.
And we're speaking with Director Dennis Bell here, Riley County Police Department. Another question here had to do with licensure and how maybe officers, do they have to have like a CDL to drive the vehicle, or is there other proper training here for that?
In this particular case, this vehicle does not require officers to have a CDL, but they are required to be trained in how to operate it because it is an unusual vehicle. It's heavy, it's top heavy. It's not a normal police patrol vehicle, so they are required to have some additional training in the operation of the vehicle.
It's a very impressive vehicle. I had a chance to, when you guys unveiled it here, kind of see the ins and outs of it, and there's a lot of interesting features that it's capable of here. I don't know if you wanted to share maybe a couple of those with us.
Well, I guess the most obvious one is it is armor plated and it has bullet resistant glass. And so the idea, again, is that you can get close to situations where there's potential for gunfire, and officers can either get close to a structure or they can get close to someone that needs to be rescued or delivered somewhere without the risk of being injured. It can carry 10 to 12 officers. It has camera systems on it so they can see outside without having to open the door to look out again. That would defeat the idea behind being protected. But that's really, when you talk about special features, I mean, those are the main things. The only other piece of equipment that it has is there are times when a decision is made to insert some sort of gas, the common name is tear gas, but there's different types, into a structure to get someone to come out. In the past, the typical delivery method was to shoot a canister through a window. The problem with that is those things get really hot, and you can actually start a fire by shooting a tear gas projectile into a home. With this, we can actually get close to a structure, and at the end of an extension arm, we can actually just poke a hole in the wall and insert the gas through that hole, so we know exactly where it's going in, how much, and you don't risk a fire being started. That's one probably most significant difference in how we can do or carry out an operation.
In the past, I know with the situation last year, the police department had to borrow the unit from Junction City Police Department. Now that you have your own, this may be where you guys are asked to assist somewhere else. How does that process work? Would you guys get reimbursed for that here?
No, it's really based on a mutual aid request, and that's laid out by statute, and I expect that will happen. We have a hazardous materials team and a bomb squad. That's the same thing happens there currently, and has been happening for years, where neighboring jurisdictions may not have those resources, and they'll make a mutual aid request for our assistance. In law enforcement, there's really an unwritten rule that when we need each other, we don't send each other invoices or say we're not coming because you won't pay us. That's just not how it works for us. We feel like if we're fortunate enough to have a resource to assist someone else, we will. Sometimes those people that we're assisting come and help us at other times as well. We just don't keep score.
All right. Well, good to know. Mm-hmm. We'll continue our conversation with Director Butler. We're going to take a break. Back with more In Focus after this on News Radio KMAN.
Might add that Verizon holders, well, I got signal back on mine. You got some, Director? Mm-hmm. Yeah? Okay. So maybe we'll, entertain those phone calls. I-37-1350 here at News Radio KMAN. And Focus returns in a moment.